This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome in to Sports Objective, as we have a very special edition with us right now. And, of course, we have with us Captain Bunk, Terry Gallagher. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Glad to be on here. Hadn't seen y'all in a while. So it's good to be back.
In fact, on the back. All right. We have a very special guest, don't we, Bubba?
Hi, you guys.
Hey.
Bubba is producing, and obviously we're having some technical difficulties with us right now. Former ECU track and field star, and now with USA track and field, Tanita Butts. How are you?
I'm doing so well and so blessed and so happy right now.
We're so excited to hear the news because I believe you're the third ever track and field star at East Carolina, former East Carolina star to ever make the Olympics, and the first female we found out. So I have to say, having a daughter, when I heard that, it meant the world to me. Another groundbreaking thing for, she wants to be a pirate, so you never know if she's going to be a track and field star.
Yes, but that's awesome.
There you go.
That's awesome, Dad. Let her go.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about the process of how, we know how great you are with the high jump, and I believe you're 21st in the world, I heard, which is amazing and in its own right. And I'll let Terry, the former track and field star at East Carolina, football star of the Pat Dyer, plus all the many years of track and field, to get down to the basics or get down to the nitty gritty. But as far as how did this all work out, that the selection process, and the training, all the stuff you've had to go through?
Man, if you only knew. I'm just going to give you a snippet. So let's start from the beginning. I had a great 2019 season. I got third at USA Championships, and I made the finals at World Championships. I made eighth place. So that got me a lot of ranking points and bumped me up to like 15th, 16th. And then as time went on, more women started to get the standard, and that's how I ended up 21st. But the World Athletics, they take top 32 in the world, the world rankings. And that is the reason why I'm on this team. I believe they felt like it was kind of unfair that everyone leading up to Tokyo with the great season had to, you know, be postponed. So they said they would use the world ranking points to select the rest of the field if you didn't have the standard. And I was next in line, and it's been a crazy season, you guys, because to be honest, I had no place to train since 2020 indoor season, and I had really no access to my coach. My coach is a college coach, and his priorities were his college athletes, and unfortunately, my husband and I were kicked to the curb. And kicked off tracks all year, all season. And we pretty much have been training in the gym and wherever we could. We've been using our competitions as practice. And it's nothing but a grace of God that I made this team. I'm telling you, it's been a tough year.
That is a great story. By the way, our great friend Bubba Rosenbaum, who unfortunately audio is not working for him, he told me LaShawn Merritt and Lee McNeil were the two gentlemen that made in previous track and field stars. And Terry, Captain Bunk, you would have made the Olympic team, but Jimmy Carter, our president, boycotted the Olympics. That's why you didn't make it.
That's not exactly the true story. I had to reach the facts that a 5'8" guy is not going to be able to jump 42-inch hurdles. and not on a world-class level. So, so that that took care of that. But no, you know, the thing about us is we measure in feet as far as the field events go. You know, most of us here used to hear it in feet. So tell us in our language how high you jump and like what's the starting height at the Olympics and that sort of stuff. Just some things that we could relate to.
Can you hear him?
Sorry, you guys, my earpods are acting funny.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get Tanisha back. Tanita, right? She's going to the Olympics, Terry. I know that I was trying to help you out there with that story. I was trying to make up something there.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you're back.
You're back. Sir, I didn't know if you could hear. Did you hear his question there from Terry talking about feet?
And I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Right. What I was asking is, you know, kind of be able to give us we understand things more in feet and inches rather than the meters and things when you talk about the field events. So, what are some of your measurements? What's like the starting height? I'm interested to know the starting height at the Olympics.
Well, the starting height was usually when it comes to the championships. The starting height is usually kind of high. Like
right
below 6 feet. We're usually around 180. And this time Olympic trials was only, I believe, I wanna say 5'10".
Okay.
And maybe 5'9", about 177. But my personal best is 6'4", so 193 meters.
That's,
and the Olympic standard is 196.
Okay.
So that's just a five.
Right. Yes. But there again, and how tall are you?
I'm 5'9", and most of these women that have made the Olympic teams, they are 5'11" or taller, average 6 feet.
So yes. I can relate to that. You're the one who would show up and people kind of look over you, then once the event starts, they start going, yeah, well, look at that little short girl.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the shortest in the game. Anika McPherson is definitely the shortest in the game. Definitely have a challenge there more than any of us with the height. But I have volleyball players come up to me and look at me like, what sport do you do? And I'm like, oh, I do track and field. What? Well, are you a hurdler? Are you a sprinter? I'm like, no, I'm a high jumper.
Yeah.
And they're like, aren't you kind of short to be a high jumper? I was like, yes, I am. Thank you.
What about the mental barrier of being able to jump? Like the first time you jumped 6 feet, was that what is the mental barrier for you? Because it's hard to just walk up and. Yeah, to jump over something higher than you.
You know, when that first happened, that was in college. I first cleared 6 feet. I mean, my whole career, I've been doing track for 23 years, and I started high jump when I was 10. So when I got to college freshman year is when I first cleared my 6 foot bar, and I mean, I remember just going up to it and just looking at my coach like, you're insane. Like, how do I remember asking myself, like, how am I going to do this? I don't know, but I'm going to try. And then next thing I know, I'm soaring over 6 feet and 6 feet plus, like, easily. And honestly, you just, after you clear it, you're like, oh, I can do this again. And then again and again. And then that becomes kind of like the average height that I can clear. And you know, when it gets higher and higher, you have to believe in yourself, because high jump is so mental. It's so technical. So once you're in shape, you got your physical down, it's all mental. And if you don't believe you're going to get over that bar, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get over that bar, regardless of how great shape you're in. You got to believe it.
So, Tanita, talk about
It could be a huge mental block.
Right, right.
Talk about your personal best. What is the personal best as far as a height that you've cleared the bar?
That is my 193 meters, so 6'4".
Wow.
I cleared that in 2019 at the World Championship. So on the biggest stage of my life, and it was perfect timing. I had got selected for my performance that year from USA Championships, and I had already made another personal best at USA Championships at 192. And then in finals, I cleared 193. And like I said, that was perfect timing. It happened so fast. It was so easy that I was in disbelief. And then when the Olympic standard came up, 196, I knew I just had it. I knew it. I was like, okay. I looked at my husband and my coach. I was like, I got this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was feeling so great. Everything was just great timing. My technique, my mental was great. I almost cleared that height on the first attempt. So I know it's in me. I definitely know I'm capable. So I have a competition this weekend, and I'm going to try to go for it again, see what happens.
Okay.
Talk about the experience right now with I know Bubba's asking about which we learned of recently of no fans at the Olympics, which is crazy from your perspective as an athlete and the energy. I mean, is that going to be tougher for you? I guess it's hard to know, right?
No, it's not hard to know because a lot of our U.S. meets, a lot of our domestic meets have been empty. I've already competed at the Oregon Stadium twice since they reopened the new track. And our first competition was the Grand Prix, and it was just coaches, officials, and athletes out there. Nobody really there to watch. It was just crickets. And you know what? I realized that I do well regardless of the situation. As long as I'm dialed in, it's not going to affect me. But a lot of my competitors who are used to that big stage, that big crowd, that attention narrowed on them, that may be a problem for some of them. But for me, I've got strong mental. Like, if I'm in groove, I'm going to be just fine. Doesn't bother me one bit.
Track and field it's never been a huge crowd for events, except I'm sure like in Oregon at that track there, whenever you have big meets, yeah. But growing up, you didn't participate in front of large crowds, and so
I always felt track and field was a lonely sport.
Right. Once you get between the lines, or out there on the, working on your takeoff and stuff, you're in your own world anyway.
Yes, so. Absolutely. I mean, it's all you. It's all your efforts. If you're not on a relay team, it's just you and your talent and skills that you've been, putting in hard work and sweat for.
Right. Right, because high jump, it's sadistic anyway. You're never going to go out. You're not going to continue making. You're going to reach a limit. So the whole thing
end on a rejection.
So you got to be consistent. Your whole thing is consistency.
That's the name of the game, is consistency. And you could tell the ones that made the team that did well at trials, they had consistent training. They had a consistent coach. And, I'm in the best shape of my life, of my career, but I didn't have a consistent place.
And we lost Tanita there. We'll get her back here in just a second. I'm sure it'll come back. It's one of those things. Technology is great when it works, right, Captain Bunker?
Okay.
Now we are back.
There she is again.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, got you back.
One second.
All right. All right. Well, track and field, obviously, the Olympics are starting in 10 days, Terry, July the 23rd.
Right.
Where you can watch locally locally in Eastern North Carolina on WITN. It's a TV station in Eastern North Carolina, the Greenville market, if you will, Greenville, New Bern, Jacksonville. And obviously, by the way, Terry, if you want to watch all 7,000 hours of the Olympics, you can do so on the Peacock.
That's right.
If you get Peacock.
And, I do have it. Yes, watch I, it all.
I know you're going to be watching all 7,000 hours. we'll get her back.
Right.
Let's see if we can get her. We got her back in now, I believe. Hey there.
There she goes.
What was your question?
Just talking about your more or less growing up without large crowds and how you just motivate mm-hmm. yourself anyway.
It's very self-motivated sport, definitely. You've gotta be okay with being by yourself, dealing with rejection, not being able to blame anybody else but yourself for right. the hamburger that you ate or the time that you ran or whatever it is. You can blame nobody but yourself.
But your takeoff spot was loose.
Yeah. Yep.
So a lot of things. Yeah.
You're taking the time with us right now in the gym. What kind of training? What are you doing like to get that? What's the right term, Terry? But you got to get that spring, that step. You got to really be that to be able to jump that high. It's amazing. What kind of training do you do? To every sport that you have is different. And I'm sure it's probably that way in track. If you'll, every event is going to be different of the kind of training you're going to do mm-hmm. Get that competitive advantage.
Well, for me, I've gone through a lot of injuries. So right now I'm pretty healthy. I'm managing my injuries really well. So I'm working mainly on my technique. So my approach, working with a new coach here in Atlanta right now. Her name is Nicole Hudson, and she's awesome. Right now I'm at the gym. So today was just a bit of cardio, just trying to keep my body slim and light. Usually I kind of combine that with some lifting, Olympic lifting, like squats or some cleans. Some days it's pretty heavy, some days it's kind of light, and plyometrics. That is my bread and butter for staying mm-hmm. very springy and strong, plyometrics. And just working on my small muscles, doing little things that help keep my hips and my ankles and my knees strong, my joints, things like floor exercises, Pilates, and core work. I mean, it's across the yard. I'm doing everything.
But you reach a point, though, you want to make sure you're not overworked. You want to have that, to have that feeling that you need some rest. So that there comes a point.
Absolutely. My recovery time is everything for me, especially at my age. I'm 31 years old, and like I said, I manage my injuries really well. I don't go out hard in the weight room all the time. I may keep it short. I'll do some light cardio on the bike or mm-hmm. some walking on the treadmill. And then some days I'll skip lifting and I'll just do four exercises. But I have usually my rest days are active recovery. So it's not completely off. It's just a light day. Mm-hmm. And that helps just kind of work through the soreness and the fogginess of my joints. Just trying to stay smooth and loose.
Keep the lactic acid out.
Right, right. And this gym has a hot tub and a sauna. Man, it's great. Luxury.
Right.
Terry and I wish we could have that. I'm 48 and he's a couple years. He's my older brother. So we need that. Man, just a normal day. Luxury. Just a normal day.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Seriously. Help
talk
my
about
little achy bones.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. 31. Oh, my goodness. I want to ask you about the process about getting to the Olympics. I mean, not getting to the Olympics, but now that you're in the Olympics, Tokyo. What kind of things are you going to have to go through? I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of, with the outbreak they've had in Tokyo, there in Japan, with COVID-19. You've got those protocols that normally an Olympic athlete would never have to worry about. Worry about that, manage that, plus all the other stuff. What is stuff what you have to do once you get to Tokyo?
Well, before, we have to get our testing 96 hours and 72 hours leading up to our departure date. So for me, I've just scheduled a PCR test on the 23rd, the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th. All right. Just all those days, I don't want to hear any complaints from these people. I'm set. And then I have to do Japan's requirement paperwork and documents, have a physician sign off on some papers, you know, make sure my vaccination card is on file, and show up on time. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, we're not gonna be able to walk around the city or anything. We're gonna be pretty secluded in our Olympic village, which is fine with me. I'm not trying to get sick, and you know, I can always go back to Tokyo on my own time. But this is a business trip, and I just got to keep that in perspective. Like, if this wasn't a pandemic year, then I would love to, you know, spend my time walking around the city and enjoying myself. But because there are so many restrictions, I kind of just gotta be, you know, the sacrifices are there for a reason. And I just gotta enjoy the little bit that I have. I'm sure we'll have some entertainment and something, maybe like hospitality area. But for the most part, we just gotta stay indoors and protect ourselves. Wear masks on the plane, all that good stuff.
Right. Here's another. Joining us right now is Kyle Barber. He actually is one of the co-hosts on the show, a future Olympian, by the way.
I don't think so, Dave. Hey, how are you? Congratulations on the chance to compete for our country in Tokyo. Awful proud to see a pirate over there.
Thank you so much.
When do you plan on leaving, and what's your schedule like as far as when your event is and all?
I plan on leaving on the 27th. I get there on the 28th. It's a pretty long flight. I think about 14 hours. But I have a competition this weekend in Jacksonville, Florida, and I plan on going for that Olympic standard again. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling pretty positive, so I think things gonna happen.
Right.
You know, we're, I feel like my old through. Self again. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty springy, and that's most of the battle, is feeling positive and believing in myself, honestly, because, like I said, it's more mental than physical.
Yeah. Right. This may have already been asked. I'm sorry, I'm joining the interview late. At what point did the Olympics become a realistic goal for you, and is it a dream you've had your whole life?
That's a great question. No, it wasn't always a goal my whole life. It wasn't my childhood dream. I come from a very small town, so I'm a Southern girl, and I grew up pretty hard. So those dreams are just kind of too big for me, and to me, like, my thought process, I couldn't even fathom thinking and dreaming that big and I've always been talented. People would say, oh man, you could go to Olympics, you just keep on going, stay persistent. And I'm like, yeah, I know I'm good, but I don't think I'm that good. You know, you're talking to a teenage girl, and then I get to college and I realize, like, I'm pretty good, and I'm making national championships. And I get runner-up both years my senior year. So I'm like, okay, I could really be great if, you know, I had some consistent training, good recovery, because I battled injuries my whole career. It was always something. Every championship year I was dealing with the injury. And, you know, high jump, it's really hard to find that good training and good coaching, because majority of us are developmental athletes. And we, through high school, they kind of just throw you in anything. But once I realized that I can hang with the big dogs, I was like, yeah, I definitely want to go to the Olympics. And
now, where did you grow up? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there.
Oh, that's okay. I grew up in Hinesville, Georgia. I was born in Hampton, Virginia, but I moved back to Virginia in 2006. So about 16 years old, sophomore in high school, and that's when I end up going to T.C. Williams. Remember the Titans High School?
Oh, yeah.
Now they changed the name to, I believe, Alexandria City School. So, I had a chance to go to the old building, and it was really fun. I got to meet Coach Boone and Coach Yost. Those guys are so great. I believe Coach Yost is no longer with us, but I mean, those are great guys. They were so supportive. We all got inducted into the Hall of Fame at the same time.
That's cool. Not many people. That's one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite actors, Denzel Washington. I know you have to run, but quickly before you go, can you tell us quickly about your mental prep? Maybe some songs that could get even a guy like Kyle Barber moving fast.
Okay. Man. I have a very eclectic taste in music. Some days I need my gospel, and some days I need like some Bruno Mars or like some Stevie Nicks.
You've got a list on YouTube. There's some music of yours.
Love it all.
Yeah, because I was listening. I was checking some of it out. Yeah, it's interesting, the music you have. Yeah.
I mean, I listen to it all. It's a great beat, and it's, you know, not a lot of cursing. I don't listen to a lot of music with cursing in it. I like a good vibe. To get me going, whether it's, you know, what I need spiritually or what I need to pump me up in the weight room, get my feet moving, get my hands pulling that weight. I love it all.
Or the sounds of the whale, you know.
I got a request from Pirate Nation.
Okay.
When you're standing up there, and on the metal stage, and you're getting gold, you got to
have a lot of faith in me, Kyle.
I do.
I gotta do the
I would prefer the skull and crossbones. Put your arms in front of your chest.
Oh yeah.
But I'll take the finger hook, whichever one you prefer.
You know what? I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to do that because there's no protesting on the podium. It's not protesting. they will probably not give me my medal if they felt protesting.
Pirate Nation would rebel.
We would.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
we would lose our minds if you did that. And they didn't give you your medal. Oh my! Could you imagine?
That's a beautiful dream. And you know what?
We're going to Walmart.
I always aim high.
That's funny.
As long as you don't say go Tar Heels, we'll be
on this one. That's funny you say that. My coach here in Atlanta, she's a Tar Heel.
Oh, my Lord. You're making her a much better person.
Maybe
she's great. She's awesome. She was a heptathlete back in her time. Right.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I know we're going to make sure you're not late for your next meeting. Good luck to you. We'll be pulling hard for you. I'll be watching you on the Peacock streaming channel. We'll be doing that. Appreciate you very, very much.
Good luck this weekend.
Pleasure talking with you. Take care.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, guys. I've got to run, actually. I know that we've got some roundtable topics, but I've got my daughter, Mackenzie, has a softball party tonight, end of season thing. So I'm going to go decorate.
I ain't got a party like a softball party because the softball party never stops.
There you go.
So I'll let you guys. I know the show's in good hands. I'll see everybody from next time, and go Pirates. I'll see you soon, guys.
Arrgh.
All right, bye.
All right, Dave. All right, so Dave's gone. Let's talk about him, guys. First
of all, Kyle, can you hear me?
Got you, Bubba.
Okay, because Anita couldn't hear me. Terry, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, we're good to go.
Anita couldn't. Well, I was wondering why you weren't participating, but
I would have loved to have taken part in that interview with Tynita, technology was not cooperating.
Very nice young lady, and obviously, anytime you get to see a pirate compete in the Olympics, you're going to root for her. But nice to see. She was very polite and seemed to be very appreciative, and that's good to see. And so we'll be rooting for her double hard.
Absolutely.
Guys, taking a look, let's have a little round table. We'll start off with East Carolina football. Obviously, that's something we're all three passionate about. We just finished an excellent conversation, Kyle and I did, with Donnie Kirkpatrick, the third-year offensive coordinator, and certainly no stranger to Pirate.
And Terry, your name came up.
I'm trying to remember, was that Dave or was that you, Kyle?
That was me. I referenced Terry pointing out that C.J. Johnson had not went through a spring practice until this year.
That's correct.
But I thought it was an excellent interview that will be dropping either later this evening or sometime in the next day or two. So stay tuned for that. And Kyle, go ahead and talk for a moment. I'm getting a phone call.
I can hear that. Yeah. So you will have that Donnie Kirkpatrick interview out later today. I thought it was great. You can tell there's a lot of optimism in his voice, Terry. And one thing I found interesting about the interview, and you'll hear it later, is he really challenged Holton. He said Holton needs to take it up to the next level. He's shown what he can do at times. For example, that Tulsa game, he really needs to be consistent with it, and instead of just having flashes. And kind of talked about him getting inside of his own head. He'll go on streaks where he'll throw a lot of interceptions in a row, and how he challenged Holton personally to get some quickness back, lose a little weight and get some of that quickness back, because he wants him to be able to utilize his legs when he needs to a little better and avoid the rush a little bit. He thought about how Holton, once he got going, could still run last year, but sometimes in the pocket he had a little bit of trouble avoiding the rush. So interesting to hear those comments from Donnie, kind of challenging Holton publicly. And Holton is going into his junior year. So, he's a leader. So, I think he's always been a leader from day one in terms of mentally. But I think Holton will step up to those challenges and is at a point in his career where he can accept getting them publicly.
I believe, too, he got – His career didn't take the best start it could have, and I think it really hurt him actually playing when he did the first year. In terms of him being able to, he was able to just play and play his way, and I don't think he had to develop like he could have been had he just been focusing on becoming a better quarterback.
Like you're saying, Terry, I think of that Tulane game late in that 2018 season. We had to throw the ball something ridiculous, like 65 times or something. Right. And that's not the way Coach Houston and this staff or most staffs want to function. But just throwing deep ball after deep ball to Trayvon Brown, and it wasn't a recipe for success, to say the least.
Well, he wasn't able to just sometimes it's good to watch from the sideline, and sometimes that gives you a different view about things too. And by him just stepping in and playing and all like he did, I think it put a lot of pressure on him to be the something that maybe wasn't quite ready to be, but he had the competitiveness about him and the talent that he could function at high levels at times. But I think it's time for him to take a step up. He's in terms of calendar age, he's older. He's, obviously been playing a long time, seems like. Feels like he's been our quarterback for years now, though.
Yeah, he definitely has been starting in 2018. And the thing about it is, with the COVID rules, if he wants to, he can return in 2022.
And that's good all the way around. I think we've got some talent at the skill positions for sure, and I believe the offensive line is going to be better, keeping them healthy, keeping them together, is you can keep that rotation of guys together and not having to come up with a different tackle each week or a different guard or a different center. if you pretty much got the same guys intact week after week, that's when you get a good offensive line. And I think we're capable of doing it. So I'm excited to see things coming. I look forward to it.
Guys, I don't know if you guys wondered what happened to me just a minute ago, but my dog was barking like a lunatic because Jessica had just gotten home. And I put the phone on mute and was trying to get to the door so she'd shut up barking. And she decided to trip me. And luckily, I didn't get hurt. But anyway, to finish what we were talking about with the quarterback, and Bubba, you and Terry might have finished my thoughts and what Coach said and what Terry alluded to. Terry talked about how Holton got off to a bad start by playing so early, and Donnie kind of talked about that, and Bubba, maybe you told him that. He kind of talked about how early in his career that he was kind of just told to go make plays because we were in a position where we weren't any good, and basically Holton was just told to go make plays and try to, you know, be in games. And he said, now we're in a position where we need to try to win games. So we need him to make the right plays at the right time.
Oh yeah.
I didn't dive into any of Donnie's comments. I just talked about that Tulane game in 2018. You remember fairly late in the year, about, I don't know, game 10 or something down in New Orleans. And it was actually a competitive ball game. I want to say we maybe lost by a touchdown. Yeah, a touchdown, maybe 31-24 or something like that. But despite it being pretty nip and tuck throughout, we threw the ball like 60 or 65 times, and Holton completed about a third of his attempts. And we just had no running game whatsoever. And that's one of the things, Terry, that we talked about with DK, and that is just being able to have a solid running game like we showed last year. Yeah, we had games like Georgia State and Tulane where the scoring time maybe didn't allow us to run the ball, or we just couldn't run the ball. But by and large, we had the best running game that we had since, I guess, probably at least 2016, but really the Ruffin McNeil era. And because in 2014, even though we're running an air raid offense, the last time that we had a winning season and went to a bowl game, we had a very solid running game to go with our aerial attack. And then I looked it up. That team was a lot better against the run defensively than a lot of people probably remember, you know, with Tank with the Swamp Monster, there in the middle, who was a tank. And with him eating up so much space, and with the way that bunch was able to slow down the run, I think only allowing about 115 yards a game, that's something that we haven't been remotely close to in recent years. We've been averaging allowing, 175, 200 yards a game rushing.
Yeah, 14, our problem was pass defense. You wouldn't think that'd be the case in an air raid offense. You would think our pass defense would just automatically be decent, but no, in 14, our defensive woes relied in the back end of the defense. CUCF game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sticking with football, something that's excellent to see that Dave and I referenced when we had a conversation with Phil Steele earlier today, today being Tuesday the 13th, here in the last few days, it was retweeted by Mike Houston and ECU football that I think 70% of the team was on the AAC all-academic team, which is just probably unheard of. And we had a team GPA of like 3.04 or 3.05. Just it's a record that broke last year's record, which was a new mark for the program.
Yeah, that's good to see. I've never, I'm going to be honest with you. That's never been something I concerned myself with very much. As long as guys stay eligible, that's all I care about. And that's just me being honest. But it shows the type of young man Houston is recruiting and the staff. It shows the kind of support they're getting, on the academic side of things from the staff, that we got a good academic support group. And it reflects really well on everybody. So definitely only positives.
And that's the reason I bring it up, Kyle, because you've seen with East Carolina baseball, 3.45 or 3.5 GPA several semesters in a row now, in excess of a 3.4, but then the on-field success and then the success in the community. So that's the reason I brought that up about the GPA, because I think it reflects the caliber of individual that Coach Houston's bringing into the program. Not only are they a good player, but they're also a good student and a quality person. And I think that will pay off in so many ways.
Yeah, and the reason I say I've never paid a lot of attention to it is because a lot of good people just ain't good students. You know, I never was a good student. Terry never was a good student, even though he was a teacher. I mean, it's just some people, that's just not their deal. It doesn't mean they're not good people. So that's the reason I've never paid a lot of attention to that. But it does show work ethic. If you're putting in the work to get those good grades, then that reflects how hard you're willing to work probably at anything.
Well, I think, too, if you're going to be successful on the field, you need to be successful off the field. So you can't just talk it. You got to live it. And
what was your GPA, Terry?
Well, it improved after a certain point in my life there. Once I realized that football was not forever, I did improve. I'm not going to say to what, but I did make it out of – I made it out of here, thank the Lordy.
You graduated. Yeah. C's get degrees. No, and obviously, you know, I'm not trying to malign or yeah, whatever the right term would be. Obviously, it's something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Speaking of East Carolina baseball, though, here in recent days, we had a new pitching coach named in Austin Knight. But something that we did not discuss on a recent show, where we did talk about Austin Knight being named the new pitching coach, was Carson Wisenhunt. He had an excellent performance, 3 innings. I think he allowed 1 run on 2 hits, struck out 6 for Team USA.
Okay. We had a kid drafted too, didn't we? A pitcher drafted. In,
yeah, we had a couple kids drafted.
Okay, I didn't see. I saw, what, number 23 in the or 23rd overall or something like that.
Bubba just dropped out. He would be there. We go, Bubba. How did we do in the MLB draft? You'd be the one with that information.
Yes, we had Gavin Williams. He became the second highest draft selection ever out of East Carolina. He went 23rd overall. So right. pretty coincidental or ironic there with him going 23rd. And obviously, everybody knows what I'm referencing there. And he went 23rd overall to the Cleveland Indians, who will be becoming the Cleveland whatever here in the coming years.
I think I should go with the Steamers.
But, yeah, I won't touch that one. No pun intended. No. Really? But, yeah, in addition to him, you had Connor Norby. Connor Norby went early second round, 41st overall to the Baltimore Orioles. And then today, while we were having that conversation with Donnie Kirkpatrick, Dave texted me and told me that Thomas Francisco was selected in the 19th round. I'll double check on who. I think it may have been the Cardinals, but I'm not 100%, but he did go in the 19th round. So he'll have a decision to make as to whether he's going to begin his professional career or return to play for East Carolina.
How many rounds is the MLB draft? Is it 24?
No, it is. It was 20 this year. And so Franny obviously got drafted there at the very end. In previous years, I think it had been 40. Last year, because of COVID, it was only 5. But this year, after Major League Baseball realigned the minor leagues and took a lot of the minor league teams and, you know, reassigned them or did away with them. So not as many minor league teams. So that meant instead of 40 rounds, they cut it in half to 20.
Yeah, and this should be good for college baseball. You should have more talent in college baseball longer. It's interesting to see that MLB purchased some rookie league teams like the Appalachian League or purchased a collegiate league. Turned a rookie league into a collegiate league that the MLB now owns. I find that very interesting.
And Kyle, Johnny Robertson gave his
stamp of approval. He's, as you see there on the screen, he said steamers, exclamation point, with the crying till he laughed.
Yes, and we just won't say it together. You know, Eatonton's the steamers, and I hear they're the farm team.
Moving on from Pirate baseball, down in Georgia, obviously, Terry, several years ago, was very familiar with what Mark Richt did at the University of Georgia, and then obviously moved on to Miami after Georgia parted ways with Coach Richt. But sad news here in recent days. Mark Richt came out on social media saying he had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah. My granddad had Parkinson's. You can live a long time with Parkinson's. Michael J. Fox has it. It depends on how aggressive it is, how much it'll affect you, the way it affects you physically, you know, tremors, or sometimes it affects your speech. But hopefully Mark's in a position where he'll be able, obviously he should be he's Mark Richt. He should be able to get the best treatment available, and hopefully his won't be very aggressive.
Yeah, hopefully not. I did see in that same tweet, Coach Richt said that, he was doing well, generally speaking, relatively speaking, I should say, in good spirits, and that he would still be taking part in the ACC Network's broadcast this fall.
No, it sounds scary, and believe me, it is scary. I'm not trying to downplay Parkinson's disease.
Right, but it's not what a lot of folks would think.
Yes, exactly. It's not the death sentence it once was.
It's not, definitely. And it's great to see, Coach Richt, that someone has a very strong Christian faith, and you can see that in the message that he put out to his fans. But moving on from that, up in West Virginia at Marshall University, I'm not sure if either of you guys have seen this. You may have, but Cole Pennington committed to play his football in Huntington. That's the son of Chad Pennington. And then Chad Pennington was named to the Marshall University Board of Governors.
Well,
I'm not sure the order on that, but either way, some interesting news.
Well, Chad Pennington played for Marshall, obviously.
Right.
And, was his son highly recruited, Bubba?
I'm not sure about Cole Pennington's recruitment. I do know all I knew about him. I'd watched a little film on him, and he was playing in a high school, I want to say, in the Lexington, Kentucky area. And obviously with Marshall's location there in that tri-state area, that isn't very far at all from Lexington, Kentucky to Huntington, West Virginia. But I'm sure, Terry, you have, while we'll try to get Kyle back on here, we have some excellent memories of Chad Pennington's days there at Marshall back in the late 90s when they were making that transition from 1AA, as it was at the time, to 1A.
Right. They advanced fairly quickly. And, of course, they had some good players right there during that time.
Yeah. Marshall, during that transition period, was excellent going into the MAC, and I remember all those Motor City Bowls. It seemed like they were in the Motor City Bowl every damn year there for a while. Up there in Detroit, winning the MAC every year. Something I wanted to bring up, guys, and something you're probably not aware of, Bubba, Terry, you may remember him. Yesterday, I got some sad news that Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, legendary professional wrestler, passed away at 71 years old. Main evented WrestleMania 1, teamed with Roddy Piper against Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. Would probably be what the average person would remember him from, but had a great career. Really from the early 80s in the territories, Georgia, down in Florida, the old Gordon Sully wrestling, then WWF in the late 80s and WCW in the 90s. And he was a huge star at one point, and one of the best physiques I've ever seen on anybody in my life. Paul Orndorff had a hell of a physique. no homo, but just saying.
Yeah.
Part of my childhood, somebody I remember, and I'm sure other people out there remember Mr. Wonderful. I'm not the only wrestling fan out there. I thought Terry might remember him, but rest in peace to Paul, Mr. Wonderful Orndorff.
Yeah, I remember him. I'm more familiar with, of course, Dusty Rhodes and some of them guys. But
oh yeah, Bullet of Wood,
Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty's all-time legend. Love Dusty, and Dusty's been gone now, I believe, 5 years.
Yeah, he was well known through Georgia.
I was waiting for Kyle to go into character there with his Dusty Rhodes impersonation.
You want me? Let me tell you something about Rosemont. I don't want to disappoint you, baby. You're Malcolm Jameson right here in LaGrange, North Carolina. Talking about Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, one of the greatest of all time. Not as great as me, I can dream. He should have a better physique than me, but he wasn't as bad as a dream. Could have dreamed not that big. When the American Dream came out with that Bionic Elbow and dropped the baby, you knew he was live.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, he was good. He was good.
Terry, actually, if you check my Facebook page, maybe on the 4th of July, about a week ago, I posted a nice little tribute video somebody made to Dusty. So if you want to
check that out. Oh, okay.
Just Bubba, we got anything else?
Where's Bubba? We lost Bubba.
Bubba's probably handling some business. Oh, he's there. He's just got a terrible internet connection.
He's hanging around.
He's got a bad internet connection. Well, guys, as we start to wind this round table down, easy for me to say.
I guess that'll do it.
We're about a month away from kickoff, a little better than a month. Practice will be hard to believe, Terry. Practice will be starting in 2 to 3 weeks. So it's around the corner, and it's going to be football.
It's going to be a little different this year, being able to be more around it. So
be able to be there, and I think it'll be different in the win loss column also.
And I'll be coming up on a year since I've moved to Wilmington. So it's amazing what's happened in the last year, I'll tell you that.
No doubt.
So look forward to this. What was the last thing you heard me say? I think I lost you guys there for a moment.
It was gibberish.
Okay. It was you wanting him to do his Dusty Rhodes.
Okay. I know I did. I dropped you guys, and you didn't hear anything that I said regarding the schedule this fall. I just said, Terry, what were your expectations? You know, going into year three of Mike Houston, obviously, very challenging September. But while at the same
time, I'm optimistic.
While it is very challenging, it's one that you could win any of those games in September, or you could lose any of them.
Well, and again, I'm looking for how we play and effort and all that type stuff. And I think I think you're going to see improvement, bottom line.
Yeah. How you playing improvements, right? But I think Donnie hit the nail on the head. This is year three. And, we do need to start winning some more games. I do wish the schedule was a little lighter. It kind of is what it is, though. Particularly in September. September's rough. You got App State. That's a neutral site. You know, how neutral will it be? I don't know. South Carolina and Greenville. At least we get them at home. And then at Marshall, you're gonna play that Marshall game. I really don't like the spot of it because you're gonna play two really emotional games with App State and South Carolina. And you know, best case you're 2-0 and you're flying high, and then you got to go play at Marshall. Worst case you're 0-2 and you desperately need a win, and you got to go play at Marshall. So, I wish Charleston Southern was after those two, and then we played Marshall, but it kind of is the way the schedule plays out. Looking at things, if everything goes as planned, and nothing ever goes as planned, but if everything goes as planned, the way I see the conference playing out, the way Phil Steele sees the conference playing out, several other people, if we go with 2-2 in non-conference play, and we can go 4-4 in conference, we'll get to a bowl game. And most people have us going 4-4 in league play. I think we could do better than that non-conference. I think there's potential to go 3-1. But I think you need to go 2-2 non-conference if you want to get to a bowl game.
Yeah, you look at it last year, guys. We went 3-5, which was our best record in the American in a long time. And you had the deal
with Tulsa. Should have been 5-3.
Yeah, you had to deal with Tulsa, and then you had that with Navy. And like you said, I mean, some folks may look at that as kind of a, you know, push with the deal at Temple, because Temple had some bad luck with COVID then. But 4-4, 5-3.
Yeah, if you want to call Navy and Temple a push, then that's fine. I get it. But it works 4-4 because we beat Tulsa. So, it's going to be interesting how this thing plays out. I really, really believe if we're not in a bowl, we will be playing for a chance to go to the bowl the last week of the season. Hopefully, we've already got six locked up because that last game's against Cincinnati. But there should definitely be reason to watch football up until the very last week of the year if you need to be motivated and have something to play for.
It's just such a welcome change to feel like you can win any game on the schedule.
Yeah, you ain't kidding, yes. Terry. I'm sure you feel the same.
Definitely. Definitely.
So, it's been a while.
That's why I say I'm optimistic and look forward to it.
Yep.
Well, guys, if y'all don't have anything else, we'll go ahead and wrap this show up. We appreciate Tynita Butts Townsend coming on the show, sacrificing a little of her training time there in Atlanta to visit with us. Best of luck to her as she travels to Tokyo here in a couple weeks, representing not only the United States, but Pirate Nation. And then also stay tuned as we have interviews coming out later on tonight or on Wednesday with Phil Steele, as well as offensive coordinator of the Pirates, Donnie Kirkpatrick. But for Dave Richmond, Kyle Barber, and Terry Gallagher, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Take care, everyone.